Well, how are y'all? Okay, good. It's good to see everybody. Thanks for being here today. Welcome, especially if you're new with us. I just want to say a special welcome to you. We're going to be in 2 Corinthians chapter 8 today. If you want to turn there, find it on your device. And we're going to be in week 4 of our Multiply series, week 4 of 5. So next week is our last week for that. But I hope you'll go back and listen to the other ones if you haven't heard them yet, or if you haven't been here for some of those. I know people are sick and out, and so I'm glad that you guys are here because it's just that season. But we've been talking about what we want to do and how we're going to do this to become a multiplying church. Multiplication just looks like disciples, making disciples, making disciples. So how are we going to do that? Well, we're going to talk about it today again here in 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Let me start by asking this question for you, okay? Do you guys like taking tests? Yeah, I didn't think so. Most people say no, because maybe for you, test-taking conjures up these visions of like sweaty palms and fearfully squirming in your seat at school about to take a test that you're not prepared for, you don't feel like you're ready for. Or maybe if you went to college, you know, it makes you think of staying up late and pulling all-nighters and only to fall asleep at the very last minute the next day and not actually get to the exam that you have to take. You know, that fear, that may or may not have ever happened in my college experience before. I won't say anything since my parents are here who paid for that college experience. So, I mean, usually tests cause us this kind of stress and anxiety and any number of other high emotions that we have. And maybe you hate tests like me, or maybe you're one of those weird people who actually likes taking tests. Is there anybody here who, and I won't make you raise your hand because, just so you know, we all hate you if that's where you're at, okay? So just kidding. I'm just kidding, obviously, but seriously, right? I mean, nobody likes to take tests. Weird people like to take tests. I hate tests because I really hated the tests that make me feel like they're not helping my future at all. They're just useless information that I don't ever have to remember again, or they're not fair evaluations of my what I know in the subject or whatever the case might be. And oftentimes, if you're like me, I would take it personally if I didn't do well on a test, right? Like, you're like, okay, you take the test, you do poorly, you must be a bad person, right? I mean, it's like we equate this in our mind, like, just because I'm not prepared for the test means I'm not prepared for life in some ways or something like that. That's really not what a test should be for. It shouldn't be to speak to your character. It should show you how much you've grown in a certain subject, right? It's to test your, maybe we could say, maturity in a certain subject. What do you know? Where are you at? In other words, well, in 2 Corinthians, Paul does give the believers a test to see where they're at. It's not necessarily for their character, although when we start moving into like biblical things, it kind of can become about that. Maybe it is, it's arguable here, but it's really, I would rather say, about our maturity. Okay, so it tests our maturity. That's what Paul is saying. Where are they at in their Christian maturity in the Corinthian church? And so we'll be able to see that today for ourselves. We have a way to define Christian maturity as a church here at Redemption Church. It's based on the greatest commandment, Matthew 22, to live the upward, inward, and outward life, to love God completely, to love yourself correctly, and then to love others compassionately. That's how we define maturity here, based off of how Jesus defines it for all Christians in Matthew 22. Nobody's arrived at that maturity, right? We're not all perfect in all of those categories. It's a process, but we're growing in that over time. And Paul's going to argue that our willingness to give is a test of that maturity. It shows us where we're at in that process. It tests our love for God and our love for ourselves and our love for others. It tests where we're at in those things. Do we really love God completely? Do we really love ourselves correctly, or are we over-loving ourselves in some way? Do we really love others compassionately, or do we not? God's given us this test to see. So here's the main point for today. If you're taking notes, you want to write this down. Where we give our money is where we give our heart. So yes, we are talking about money today. Welcome to Redemption Church if this is your first time, okay? This is what it is. This is what 2 Corinthians chapter 8 is all about. It's the topic for today. We all love talking about it, and of course, I love talking about it to you, of course. So we're all in this agreement here. This is the greatest topic of all time that we all like to talk about in church. Now, I remember my dad saying one time that he always thought that Baptists were just after your money, okay? So now, that may show where his heart was at the time. I'm sure he's grown and matured in that. I didn't ask him before we started. But I want to assure you of something today, okay? We're not after your money here. I just want to say that very plainly to you today, especially if you're new with us. We're not after your money. We're after your heart, because that's what the Bible's after. That's what Jesus is after here. The Bible gives us this principle of generosity as a significant mark of Christian maturity in your life. it reveals what's going on inside of you, like an x-ray machine or something. If you understand the generosity of God toward you in the gospel, then you will be generous. That's just a mark of Christian maturity. That's how it works, and that's how Jesus talks about it all throughout the New Testament. Jesus talks about generosity and giving and money more than anything else in the New Testament. You don't believe me? Go back and read the New Testament this week. I promise you that. He uses money because there's something about money that is in our heart. It's connected. So if you think this is a ruse to fill my pockets here or something like that, then I challenge you to take these principles about money and giving, apply them to somewhere else. Take them and apply them to another organization in Roanoke that you trust, if you don't trust me. And that's fine. The problem is, though, when I make that challenge, usually nobody is willing to do it anyway. It's not that I'm asking for your money or something like that. It's that you don't want somebody to talk about your money because you're putting your finger on something that's in your heart that you love more than you love God, or you trust more than you trust God. So it's not that you don't trust me or our church or some other organization. It's that you don't trust God. That's always what money reveals. It's where our treasure is where our heart is. Somebody taught that somewhere in the Bible, okay? So if most of our treasure is in a savings account, man, our heart's in a place of trusting ourselves or our money more than we trust God. If most of our treasure is spent on frivolous things, entertainment, pleasure, comfort, then our heart's in a place of total self-centeredness, worshiping ourselves rather than worshiping God. It just works that way. So what God often does is test us and stretch us to prove where we're at in our maturity process, not to beat us down or make us feel guilty, but to call us up, to help us grow, to help us in continuing to mature, to say, listen, you're not there yet. Here's where you are. Here's where you need to go. Let me help you get there. And that's what the gospel does for us. And one such test is what we're willing to give away in our lives. So as we turn to the text, let me give some context here as we look at 2 Corinthians chapter 8, just so that we know where we're at. Paul's been urging the Corinthians to give to the victims of a famine that was in Jerusalem and throughout the empire into Egypt and all of this different stuff. And he's not commanding them to give here. He'll say that outright. He wants them to want to give. He wants them to have an eager willingness, he'll say. That's the language he'll use. And he says that their giving will be a test of their love. That's literally the words that he uses. So let's just pick it up here in verse 1. I'm going to read through verse 15, so it's a little bit of a chunk, maybe a little bit more than normal that I would read. But here, follow along with me and see what he says to the Corinthian church. He says, "We want you to know, brothers and sisters, about the grace of God that was given to the churches of Macedonia. During a severe trial brought about by affliction, their abundant joy and their extreme poverty overflowed in a wealth of generosity on their part." Very interesting language. So out of the poverty flowed generosity. "I can testify that according to their ability and even beyond their ability, of their own accord, they begged us earnestly for the privilege of sharing in the ministry to the saints." He's talking about giving. "And not just as we had hoped. Instead, they gave themselves first to the Lord and then to us by God's will." So it's not just what he hoped, it's beyond. They gave all of themselves. "So we urged Titus that just as he had begun, so he should also complete among you this act of grace." So Titus is there with the Corinthians. He's saying, you ought to do this. "Now as you excel in everything, in faith, speech, knowledge, and in all diligence, and in your love for us, excel also in this act of grace. I'm not saying this as a command." Very interesting. "Rather, by means of diligence of others, I'm testing the genuineness of your love. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ, though he was rich, for your sake he became poor, so that by his poverty you might become rich. And in this matter I'm giving advice because it is profitable for you, who began last year not only to do something, but also to want to do it. Now also finish the task, so that just as there was an eager desire, there may also be a completion according to what you have. For if the eagerness is there, the gift is acceptable according to what a person has, not according to what he does not have. It's not that there should be relief for others and hardship for you, but it's a question of equality. At the present time, your surplus is available for those in need so that their abundance may in turn meet your need in order that there may be equality. As it is written, the person who had much did not have too much, and the person who had little did not have too little. And he's quoting an Exodus passage there. So that's where I want to stop, but let's just wrap our minds around this for just a second. I want to take a three-step approach to this that I totally ripped from Tim Keller. You'll hear his name a lot here because he helps feed my soul with the gospel and with the scriptures, and so I'm just taking it straight from him because it's easy here, and I think it helps frame the discussion in this text, but we're going to talk about the problem, the key to the problem, and then how to get the key. So the problem, the key to the problem, and then how to get the key. So the first thing, the problem. Problem is we all have greedy hearts. So you can write that down. You can take that home with you. I know, again, super uplifting, right? So there it is. We all have greedy hearts in some way, shape, or form. The problem is we either don't want to admit it, or maybe we don't realize it. And that might be where you are if you don't think that that's you. See, greed's usually a hidden problem in our heart. It's something that we might miss when we're trying to like do an inventory of things that we struggle with in our lives. It's not like adultery, for example, right? It's hard to argue that you didn't know that you were doing something wrong when you were physically intimate with somebody, not your spouse, right? Like that's a very visible outworking sign that there's a problem in your life. Even with pornography or masturbation or something with lust, it's in your heart, but it's something you know outside of yourself that you're like, this is not right because I'm doing this. It's not right. So you can see that. It's very visible. It's a very visible thing in your life, but that's not how greed usually works. It's very hidden behind things that you spend your money on or things that you're willing to give or not give to. It's very hidden in your heart. You might know you're stealing, but you don't always know when you're putting your hope in something like money. It's harder to see. You're self-deceived. It's like pride in some ways. Pride's the same way. It's like at the very foundation of all the problems that we have, and yet it's so easy for us to miss. But where we give our money is where we give our heart. Now, during our sermon prep time, Pastor Michael said it like this. I thought this was so smart. Money is one of the few outside indicators of what's really going on in our heart. How you spend will reveal to you what you really believe, what you really value, and where your heart really is. So what we do with our money really becomes this test for us that Paul's talking about here. And that can be brutal if you've never actually sat down and done that and looked through your finances or looked through your numbers. Maybe you need to go and do that this week. Maybe that'll be a step for you. I know Jason and Taryn Pelletier, some leaders in our church, they gave us their story last Christmas. So it's on our website or it's on our YouTube channel if you want to go and look this up. But they said they sat down and actually looked at their numbers as they decided to give through the month of December like we're doing this year. They wanted to do that last year as we made the call there. And they sat down and said, how can we give double what we're giving? So they wanted to run the numbers. They wanted to look, be wise stewards. And they said, we thought we were good stewards of our money until we actually looked at our numbers. But Jason would go on in the video to say they sat down and looked at how much they were actually spending on themselves and on frivolous things in their lives. They would say like entertainment and all of these other things. And he said, man, our hearts really weren't in the right place, even though we thought they were. And after this, it was an opportunity for God to do something to change their hearts and to help them rely on him even more. I really loved their openness in sharing that with the church. That's what we need to see today with us. Many of us live in such excess that we don't know that we're greedy because we don't have to look at the numbers often. You know, we don't have to go into our account and look at every penny that we're spending and make sure that we're not frivolously spending it. It's just there and it goes and it's okay. You know, I mean, we don't even think about it. Don't think twice. But man, I challenge you to pull back the curtain on your bank account this week just a little bit, just to see. Man, is this showing something about your heart that you didn't realize was there? Maybe you give your money to eating out, for example. I don't know. This is a big one. Everybody has to eat, but man, do you eat multiple times a week somewhere that costs, you know, triple or quadruple what it would if you just spend some money to cook at home? I don't know. I mean, it's depending on what you eat. But usually eating out's very expensive. We can feed our whole family for less than $15. We have five people in our family. We can feed them for less than, I asked my wife to verify, okay? She said it's $15 or less usually if she goes to the grocery store, even though it's more expensive than it used to be. But if we go out to eat somewhere, even at McDonald's or something like that, it's over $30. And if we go to Chick-fil-A, it's over $40, okay? So we all know Chick-fil-A, especially if we get the milkshakes. This is how it is, right? I mean, so we're talking like fast food, $40. Every time we eat out, it's very expensive. I'm not saying it's bad to eat out, right? We eat out. We love to eat out sometimes. It's great. But if we do that frequently and we do that frivolously, it probably shows something that's going on deeper in our heart, right? There's a deeper issue there. Maybe it's an issue of comfort. Maybe you go to food for comfort. I don't know. Maybe it's an issue of laziness. You just don't feel like it this week. Maybe it's a status symbol for you. You just, you know, you ought to be able to. You're going to go to the nicest restaurants. You're going to do the nicest things. Whatever it is for you, I don't know. But where we give our money is where we give our heart. That's the test, right? Maybe you give your money to a 401k. You might be like, wait. We're not supposed to save for the future? Well, that's not what I'm saying, is it? No. I give to my future retirement plan. I think it's a wise thing to do if we're able to do that. There's matching programs and all of that. But man, many people, maybe even most people in America, will look at their retirement plan like it's their hope. That's their future hope. And so they'll sacrifice now a lot in order to have a lot later. Well, man, if that's where your hope's at, then where you give your money is where you give your heart, right? And I think that's just an indicator for us. I'm not saying don't give to a retirement plan. I do too. But you got to be wise here. And you got to realize where your heart's at in that. Maybe it's how much you give to people at Christmas or how much you expect to get at Christmas. You know, we are in the Christmas season, and so I got to put my finger here for just a second. I know this is especially hard for parents and grandparents with their children and grandchildren, right? You want to spend hundreds of dollars, maybe even thousands, I don't know, depending on your situation, to make your kids or your grandkids feel loved by you. But man, where you give your money is where you give your heart. And that might be an indicator of something deeper going on in you about where you need your love, where you need your comfort. Because I'll tell you what, it's probably just going to end up turning them into somebody who needs to feel loved in that way or who needs material possessions over needing the gospel. It's going to create little greedy people, you know? So I don't know. I mean, these are all things that we need to consider. I mean, this is one of the big problems in America, right? We're in a luxurious culture. But what I'm really getting at here, and you can write this down if you're taking notes, is that giving tests our trust in God. That's kind of the point here that I want to make. It tests what our trust is really in. What do we really trust in our lives? Are our hearts depending on God? Are they depending on something else? Are they depending on our status or our retirement or whatever else? Are they depending on how we spend our, are they depending on where we go to vacation? Are they depending on what our job looks like? All of these different things. Are they depending on how much we save? All of this shows what's going on inside of our hearts. What's usually happening is we earn money and we see it as ours, not a gift from God, right? We see it as something that we've earned, therefore we get to do with it what we want. We don't have to depend on God. We can depend on ourselves. We can depend on our wisdom. We can depend on our bank account. But guys, that's a non sequitur, really. Just because we've earned something doesn't mean it's ours. We've worked hard for it, sure. But God is the one that gave us the ability to even work hard. It's like the stewardship parable that we talked about a few weeks ago in Psalm 67 when we talked about that, you know? Or it's like what we talked about in Jeremiah 29, or it's like what we talked about in Isaiah 2. We've been blessed to be a blessing. We've been blessed so that others might be blessed with us, that we might share the blessing with them. So it's not that we've earned what we have. It's we've worked hard for it, yes. But man, God's the one that gave it to us. Where did we get the faculties to work in the first place? Where do we get our vision? Where do we get our sense of taste and touch? Where do we get the ability to work for the money that we have? Where do we get the ears to hear, the hands to use? How'd you get the job in the first place? I mean, even the opportunities that we think we've earned or worked for are a series of circumstances that we largely don't have control over in our lives. You think about that. It was through one connection you happen to know that you might have gotten your job, or maybe it was through an ad that just happened to catch your eye, or maybe it was through some other opportunity that you knew someone and they happened to be able to give you this job. You didn't create that opportunity for yourself. It was given to you. You didn't provide it. God provided that. There's always, you can always take a step back and see who provided what, right? So it's all really his anyway. He's the one that gave it to you. It's his. He's the one that gave you the ability. It's his. He's the one who owns everything. That doesn't mean he's not for us enjoying what we have. I mean, this is what Ecclesiastes says. Here's what I've seen to be good. It's appropriate to eat, drink, and experience good in all the labor one does under the sun during the few days of his life God has given him, because that is his reward. Furthermore, everyone to whom God has given riches and wealth, he's also allowed him to enjoy them. Take his reward and rejoice in his labor. This is a gift of God. Great. Go enjoy the things that God has given you, but if that's where your hope is, and that's the primary reason you do what you do, because that's not what the author of Ecclesiastes is saying, that's the only reason it's for. If that's the reason, then man, it's all about you, because where we give our money is where we give our heart, right? And if we're giving our money over to the things that we desire, which is, you know, the Bible uses the word lust, we lust after, Man, that shows what's going on in our heart. So I'm not saying we can't enjoy what God has given us. I'm just saying, where's our heart? It'd be really hard to see those things. That's the problem. It's hidden. And so that's the problem we've talked about here. But let me get to the key. The key to the problem, the key to overcoming a greedy heart is just to give. It's to take the step of giving. It's to give it away. Man, is your heart greedy? Then give your stuff away. That's what he did with the rich young ruler, right? Give it all away, man. Problem is, he didn't realize there was something hidden in his heart and he couldn't do it. So the step is just to give. It's the test. It's the proof, if you want to put it that way. And it's not just to give anywhere, but in the context of this passage here in 2 Corinthians, it's to give to others who are in need. So it's really about people. It's giving that's directed toward people. And we say this all the time, but people are the mission, right? As we saw in Psalm 67, we're blessed to be a blessing to other people. So we saw in Jeremiah 29, why has God placed us where we're at? For the city, for the people. In Isaiah 2, who are the people that are supposed to be flocking to the mountaintop that we're supposed to engage and bring to the mountaintop with us? People from all nations, all peoples. People are the mission. And so the giving is for people. It's for the mission. People are super important. I know that's the most profound thing that maybe has ever been said in a church service ever, right? People are important. People are important to God. Where we give our money is where we give our heart. Is your money going toward people? Is your heart toward people? So how we give reveals how our heart is toward others, especially those who are in need. We could say it like this: giving tests our love for others. It's the test. Now, for you pragmatists out there, that doesn't mean unwisely giving. Paul addresses that here. He's like, hey, don't give so that you're in hardship, right? Don't give so much that it's unwise to where now you're in hardship and somebody's going to have to give to you to help build you up. Give wisely, but give what you can. It's not about the amount, he says. It's not according to what you don't have, but what you do have. So give wisely. But he's also not talking about unwise giving to those who are going to squander what you give them either. Now, he doesn't address that here necessarily, but principles in the Bible kind of go through this. Tim Keller, in his book, Ministries of Mercy, calls this out. And he says it's called the let us into your life principle. He talks about this in Ministries of Mercy. You ought to write that down if you've never read that book. It's very helpful. He says if somebody's not willing to let us into their life, to speak into how they're spending the money that we give, then they probably don't deserve the money. They probably shouldn't have it. Because the idea is, like, you don't want to give money to an alcoholic so he can go buy more alcohol, right? That's harming them more than it is helping them. So you don't want to give in a way that harms people. You want to give in a way that helps. You got to be wise. But it often takes, guess what? A relationship. Because people are super important, you know? It takes a relationship. Let us into your life. You got to be willing to get down in the ditch with the person. That's the whole deal with the parable. You know, I mean, that's the Good Samaritan. He gets down in the dirt. He gets his hands dirty. He brings the person. He creates a relationship with somebody over time. Man, we got to be willing to do that. So giving wisely is a good thing. Paul addresses that here. But we also said that this goes deeper than our money, right? It goes into our heart. I don't know if you noticed, but nowhere in this chapter does he actually say the word money. Go back and read the whole thing. He's like, he never says money. He uses words like minister to, show grace toward, serve, love. That's what he says here about giving. That's the whole point. It's about those things. It's not about the money. Where we give our money is where we give our heart. See? We follow the money, it shows us where our heart's at. So he's telling them to give generously because their hearts are for their brothers and sisters. In verse 13, Paul says it brings equality, or we could say equity. So that should evoke an idea of justice that we talked about back in the fall. Remember that idea of equity? Yeah, we all bear God's image, and so we all deserve to be treated with an amount of dignity that is equal to that. That's what justice does. It levels those scales again because we all bear God's image. So he cites Exodus chapter 16 to make that point. That's verse 15 where he cites Exodus 16. Well, we talked about that a few weeks ago. It's the Exodus passage about the manna. That's what he's talking about here with the manna. He's saying that when people gathered too much manna, if they hoarded it for themselves, then it would rot. But if they gave it to their fellow Jews who didn't gather enough, because that's really interesting, then it would be perfectly good for those people that they gave it to. How does that work? So if they kept it for, if they gathered more than they needed, and then they kept it for themselves, it would turn into worms and maggots and rot and stink. But if they gathered more than they needed, and then they gave it away to the people who couldn't gather enough, what they gave away would be perfectly good for those that they gave it to. Very interesting, isn't that? That is such an interesting principle here, because where we give our money is where we give our heart. Man, if our money's for ourselves, then it's going to rot us from the inside out. That's the idea. But if we give it away to those who need it when we don't need it ourselves, man, God uses it and multiplies it and blesses it. So the last thing to point out here is that Paul kind of appeals to their sense of competition, because he uses the Macedonian Christians in their poverty. They give generously. How does that work? What does he mean? Well, I don't think he's saying that they give in an unwise way, because he addresses that here. He's saying that even though they don't have a lot, they have more than they need. And so they're willing to give generously out of that they have. How much more should the Corinthians give is what he's saying, because, man, giving tests our maturity. And so you can write that down as well. He's appealing to their maturity here. This is the test that we're talking about, right? The Corinthians were thought to be pretty wealthy. They were a wealthy city, a wealthy society. It's probably a lot like the United States is right now. People had what they needed. I mean, people who sell papers in our context make more than people in developing countries around the world, right? I mean, the people in the lowest rungs of society here, we've talked about this before, statistically. We make more on average in our country than any other nation in the world, typically, except for maybe one or two. But we're in the top echelons. We're in the 1%, if you want to put it that way. Even people who are living in poverty here are in that category. And so, man, we need to be willing to give out of what we have, out of the abundance that God has given us in our lives. Paul's point is, it's not how much you give. It just matters that you give something. That you give something that you have that you don't need. Have you ever had a test like that? He's talking about testing them. Have you ever had a test where the answer doesn't actually matter? You just got to complete the test. It's a completion grade, right? We all love those kinds of tests, right? Just put something on the sheet of paper. It doesn't matter what it is. Just write something down. That's what he's saying here. Just give something. Just do something, Corinthians. And so that's what we need to see here as well. He's going to go on to say that he wants people to want to give, and that's based on their maturity levels. If you remember that from the parable of the talents as well, the owner divided the wealth among his servants, right? And he gave each one to their abilities. He gave it based on their abilities. We might say, and replace that word with maturity. He gave it to them based on their maturity level. Man, one he gave one he gave two, and one he gave five. Right? He gave it based on their abilities, based on their maturity. Are you going to bury what you have like the one? Or are you going to be able to multiply what you have in maturity? Because that's what maturity does. Maturity multiplies. Maybe he's working to grow you right now so that he can grow your wealth over time, so that you can give more. Maybe he hasn't given you more than you have because you're not being a good steward of it. I don't know. We said that in the very first week. Maybe he's gifted you with generosity. That's what he says in Romans 12. It's a spiritual gift. Maybe he's gifted you with the gift of being poor all the time, like I feel like I have. You know, it's like some people have the gift of making money and some people have the gift of spending money. Maybe I've been given the gift of the latter. I'm not sure. I don't know how to make money very well, right? Some people can just like put their finger on something, the Midas touch, and they've made millions of dollars. Some of us can't do that, right? Maybe you're comparatively poor. It's okay, either way, whether you're rich or whether you're poor, it's not the amount that you give, it's the amount that you give compared to what God has given you, right? That's the idea. What have you been given? He's not saying give what you don't have, he's saying give out of what you've been given. God has given us what we have to give away, because where we give our money is where we give our heart. So the point is to give something. You can start with 10% as a general rule of thumb. I won't go down this rabbit trail too far. I mean, the Old Testament gives us that principle, but we really think and like to say here that it's really more of a floor, not a ceiling, that 10%. I mean, if you go back and read the Old Testament, you'll see that the Jews actually gave up to 25% away of what they had because of the temple tax and because of all these different sacrificial things that they had to do and the law that God had given them as his special people. So man, 10% might be nothing. for you. Maybe you need to be giving way more than 10%. I don't know. Not putting ourselves in hardship, being wise. But think about that. I mean, Zacchaeus in Luke's gospel, when he, you know, he's like Zacchaeus, the wee little man. You remember that from Bible school if you grew up in church? He's the one that climbed the tree to see Jesus. He was intrigued, and Jesus went to his house, and he was a believer. All of a sudden, he was introduced, and he started following Jesus, and it radically changed his life. What was the first thing that he did? He gave away 50% of everything that he owned because he was a tax collector, and he'd stolen a lot of money. He wanted to give it all back. He realized that what he was hoarding for himself was rotting him. So he gave 50% of everything that he owned away. Maybe that's where you're at today. I don't know. Maybe that's your story. Maybe you need to be willing to give more than 10%. Now, some people think about generosity like this. I heard a story in a book that I read called All In a few months ago. He said that one of the people in his church wants to give a reverse tithe. Okay, this is the idea. Instead of giving away 10% of your money and living off the 90, this guy wants to be able to live off of 10 and give away 90. Now, I'm sure that's not right for everybody, right? He still has to be able to survive, but you got to be making a lot of money if 10% of what you make you can live off of in the United States of America right now, right? But the idea behind it is, where's his heart? His heart's to give. His heart's to be generous. His heart is in the right place. Now, that might not be what God's calling us to do, calling you to do. I don't know. Maybe he is, though. Maybe he is. Let's not discount that. It was a pretty incredible thought, though. That's the direction we need to be thinking in when it comes to generosity. Where we give our money is where we give our heart, right? That's where that guy's heart's at. I don't know, this is a challenge. It's an encouragement, kind of like what Paul does with the Macedonians here, right? To the Corinthians. It's a challenge. What usually happens is we end up saying that that 10% is our tithe tax to God. It's our tip the hat to God, you know, and say, yeah, I'm going to give my 10 because I know he saved me and it makes me feel good to give, and I'm going to give my 10% and then I'm good. I'm good. It's very religious. It's a very transactional thing, right? We give the 10, we expect blessing in return. Shows where our heart's at, right? Becomes transactional. God doesn't want our tip, though. He doesn't want just a portion of us. He wants all of us. He wants our whole heart. That's the heart language, right? When he says heart in the Bible, what does he mean? He means all of you, every bit of you. So where our money goes is where our heart goes. Where we give our money is where our whole self is at. That's what this means here. It's a challenge. It's very dangerous here. Have we given our heart to God? That's the question. Have we given our heart fully to God? Because listen, that's the way to get the key. Okay, we've talked about the problem, the greed is hidden. We've talked about the key is to exercise giving, just take the step. But man, how do we get the key? Because the key seems unobtainable to us sometimes, right? My heart doesn't want to give, so I'm not gonna. Well, here's the way to get the key. Get the key by giving your heart to God. You got to first start by giving your heart to him fully. It's called full surrender, wholly to God. Believe the gospel, in other words. Believe what Jesus has done for you. If you want to learn to give your money freely, then you got to first receive Jesus' free gift for you. You couldn't earn it. He was willing to give it to you freely. But listen, it wasn't cheap, was it? That's not cheap grace. He had to pay everything for us to get that so that we could get it freely. He had to give it all. So our freedom was bought at the highest of prices, Jesus' own life. But man, it's free to you if you're willing to believe in him and give your whole self to him. Give your heart to him today if that's where you're at. Maybe you haven't done that. Maybe you're listening online. Maybe you're here in person and you have not given yourself over to Jesus yet. Or maybe you've been living your whole life and finally we're putting our finger on something, your money, and it showed you that you've not fully given yourself over to God. Man, now's the time to do that. Our tendency is to throw away the key that God gives us. Remember, the key is giving. If we want to get over the greediness in our heart, then we got to be willing to give. And what we'll do is we'll just throw away the key. We don't want the key, right? Unless we see what Jesus has done for us. That's how we get the key. That's how we gain the ability to give. He's already unlocked our heart. He's already the one that's come and given us the key and turned the lock on our heart and opened it up. If we receive that free gift that he's offered to us. And that's how we'll be able to give with a cheerful heart, as we'll talk about next week in 2 Corinthians chapter 9. Oh yeah, we're going there next week. Don't you worry. All right, we won't stop here in chapter 8. We're going to go on to chapter 9, and I've appropriately titled it Christmas Cheer, okay, for cheerful giving. But that's the beauty of the gospel, guys. And that's what Paul appeals to here. Remember 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 8 and 9. I'm testing the genuineness of your love. For you know the grace of our Lord Jesus Christ. Though he was rich, for your sake he became poor, so that by his poverty you might become rich. Man, their willingness to give directly reflected how well they understood the gospel. That's what he's saying. It's a test of your genuineness. It's a test of your love. Do you love other people? Let me see how much you love your money. Right? Have you understood the gospel? Let me see by where you give your money. That's what he's talking about here. Generosity is the very heart of the gospel. God was generous to us. How can we not be generous in return? Jesus, though he was rich, for our sakes became poor, so that by his poverty we could receive his riches. Guys, this is not talking about money, right? It's talking about eternity. Heavenly riches. You can write this down. Jesus made himself poor to make us rich. He made himself poor. He poured out himself. In other words, it doesn't look like he gave wisely, right? That's always the question in our heart, isn't it? It's always the question in our mind. Wait, okay, I know we ought to give, but we can't give unwisely, right? Like, we got to be able to keep enough for ourselves. We got to be able to pay our bills. And yes, of course. But listen, Jesus didn't give that way. Jesus gave in a way that looks very unwise compared to what Paul says here about how we ought to give. Jesus gave all of himself, every bit of it. He gave up all the riches of heaven so that we could enter into heaven with him. That's why, I don't want to get in theological debate here, but that's why the song says reckless love. Okay? That's probably why they use the term reckless. I know it can get confusing. If you don't like the song, I totally understand. If you don't know what I'm talking about, don't worry about it, okay? That's what it looks like here, though, right? He gave it all up. Every bit of it. He didn't hold a portion back. He wasn't just tithing 10% of eternity. He gave it all so that we could know and be known by God. It's eternal riches that he's talking about here. Where we give our money is where we give our heart. It was the same for Jesus with the riches of heaven. Where he gave his riches is where he gave his heart. And he gave it all to us, guys. He gave it all away. Jesus is the king who gave up his throne so that we could have a share in his kingly rule and reign. Now we can be called sons and daughters because he himself gave up his own life as the son. He's the one that owns the cattle on 1,000 hills, the psalm says. But he gave up his full ownership to give us a stake in the company with him, if you want to think about it like that. He emptied himself, as we read from Philippians chapter 2 before the service. He emptied himself fully so that we could be made full and be filled with all the fullness of God, as we've talked about from Ephesians 3. I mean, just think about how magnificent and how great and how good that God is. That's generosity. That's true generosity. Giving yourself. He didn't just tithe the portion. He gave his whole heart, his very son, the very heart of heaven. So the mission now is to give. Can we not give ourselves to a God who's done that for us? That's challenging for me. I don't know about you. That's challenging. We give back to him in worship. And that includes our money. So in one sense, God's plan of salvation tested his love for us. God's own generosity was a test for himself and for us to know how far he was willing to go to bring us back to himself and back into his kingdom. And he, of course, passed the test by sending Jesus on the cross, right? His own generosity was a test for him. It's only appropriate that our generosity is a test for us about where our heart's at. Let me give you this story, and then we'll wind our time down here. A guy named Buenaventura Obello was a college professor in the Philippines during World War II. I think this is very interesting. That's during the time when the Japanese forces were coming in to take over the Philippine Islands, and he was there, and the head of his college, he was the dean, and he became somewhat a legendary figure through this time period of Filipino resistance and freedom. There's this myth that's now swirling around about Buenaventura. It's very interesting. Because when the Japanese soldiers came into his school, into the college, they were flying both the Filipino flag and the American flag. And of course, the Japanese confronted Obello and told him to take down the flags so that they could raise the Japanese flag and he could do it for them. That's how they would do it at the time when they came in and took over a place. And the story's told in different ways, so it's a little mythological now. I'm not sure which way is true. I read four different ways that this story may have played out. Either he lost his life, or he got shot and he lived, or, you know, he said this, or he said that. I'm not sure, but I heard one version that I really like and I wanted to share with you because it's very appropriate for us. He said that when that Japanese soldier looked at him and said, "Take the flags down," he looked right back at the soldier and he said, "There comes a point in every man's life where he must prove what he believes by what he does." Sounds like a legend to me. I don't know, right? But it's very appropriate for us. Because there comes a point in every person's life where we must prove what we believe by what we do. And I'll tell you what, nothing tests that more than what we're willing to do with our money. That's what Paul's getting at here in 2 Corinthians chapter 8. Because where we give our money is where we give our heart, right? So I want to remind you about what I said in the beginning. If you don't trust my motives for how we spend our money here or any of that, then take these principles and give somewhere else. I challenge you, do it. Because if you're not willing to give at all, that just shows where your heart is, right? But man, if you do say that this church is your church home and you want to be a part of multiplication here, then just recognize that your generosity is both an act of submission to God and an act of worship to Him. And so, you know, I mean, we're not asking you to give anything you don't have, but we're asking you here that if that's you, to fully submit to God with your whole self, not just your money, right? Let's lay all that down. Because the idea here is that if it's an act of submission, if it's an act of worship, and you're not willing to give, then you're probably not fully submitted to God. You're probably not able to fully worship Him with your whole heart. That's what Paul's getting at in this passage. And for those of you who do want to give here, man, the ask that we made at the beginning of this sermon series is to give double what you normally give during the month of December. And so today we're going to commit to that together. We got these commitment cards on your seat here. I filled mine out already. My family has prayed over this and how much we're able to give during the month of December and how much we want to give. Man, I wish I could give all of it back. Maybe one day we'll be able to. I'm not sure. But for right now, we've thought about this, we prayed about it, and we're going to write down how much we're able to give during the month of December. And we're going to come up front, we're going to place it in this very expensive basket that we have up here, okay? Very symbolic, right? But it is symbolic in the sense that we're all committing to this together. Now, again, if you're new and this is not your church home, this is not something you're willing to do, you don't want to do it, that's totally okay. We're glad you're here. I hope you see this and see how serious we are about multiplying, giving ourselves to God. That's what this is meant to be for us. It's a symbolic gesture, a way of response to the gospel that we're going to do together here as a church. And we're going to do that here in just a few minutes. But just to remind you what we're going to be giving to this coming year. The idea is to raise $60,000 during this month. That's going to be a stretch for us. We may not hit it. I just want to caveat that. And I want to couch that for you guys. We may not. Unless we're willing to give above and beyond. Because this will be, $60,000 is more than double what we're giving in a month as a church. So we're just asking God. We're asking God to stretch us, to grow us. We're begging Him to move so that we can multiply next year in 2023. We have three ministry lanes that we want to fuel this year called our Next Generation Ministries, Ascending Pipeline with a Residency, and a new strategic location. We want to fuel those next generation ministries where we can raise up students and see God use our students to save those students around them. We've cast this vision. What if our student ministry becomes that thing that is the baptism pipeline for our church? What if that becomes the way that people get baptized the most is through our kids and students ministries? We want that sending pipeline through a residency where we raise up young professionals, college students, and send them out, even with a free seminary degree by the end of their residency. We have the ability to do that. And with a strategic new location, man, we want to reach more culture shapers here. We want to do that in a strategic building, a strategic location. We said this already, buildings are just tools, but some tools are better than others. We want to try to find that tool that's going to work right for us and be effective in the mission to fuel that multiplication that's already beginning to happen here You can read more about those online on our Multiply webpage, redemptionroanoke.com/multiply. But guys, that's where we're at. And so in just a minute, I want us to respond by bringing this up here to the front and dropping it in the basket during the song. And at that time, we'll get our communion cups and we'll come back around. But let me just do this. Let me introduce a video first, a story that we want to share of a couple in our church, Chris and Amy. This is their story about why they want to multiply, and then I'll come back up here and give you further instructions. Watch this story real quick.